There were a fleet of nets, a whole fleet of nets, like 40 nets. And you'd leave here, we say, on a Monday evening, and you'd steam away to the Isle of Man, which would be 60 miles, and you'd shoot the nets, as we call it, at 8 o'clock in the evening, and you'd start hauling them at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you'd be 3 hours hauling, and that'd be after 4 or 5 o'clock when you'd be finished, depending on the catch to be in them. And then you'd steam from that to Ardlass in County Down, and that's where you'd land your herrings when you'd be fishing at the Isle of Man, yes. And you'd stay there, sat Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, and we'd come home here Friday night. It was a hard life. We'd be hauling the nets from 1 o'clock in the morning. Take you 3 or 4 hours to haul them, then you'd have to shake them, and you'd steam to Ardlass, and you'd be there waiting to put them away. You'd get no sleep at all. If you had 2 hours sleep, you'd be lucky for the day.
Even then, I wanted to be in the wheelers. I wanted to be in control of the boat. I wanted to be a skipper of a boat. So that was 74, and I stayed fishing. And in 1978, I was 17 and a half when I took to Sean O'Gard for the very first time. That was one thing my father done. My father never stopped me. He encouraged me the whole time. And one day, it was a nice fine day, and we had 4 good crewmen on the deck, and he said to me, "Away you go." And he showed me what to do. He didn't go with me. He showed me what to do. And I can see now why. Because you have to learn yourself. You have to know what to do. The best skipper in the world can show you what to do, but you have to do it yourself. You have to know. You make your own decisions. You make your own mistakes. So I can remember then being out that day and coming home and feeling real proud. I can't remember what fish we got, but I can just remember being proud to my mother and father telling them, "I'm a fisherman now."
You'd be down coiling the rope down, we'd be hauling the nets, you'd be coiling the rope, and the engine would be beside you. And the boat would be rolling like that, and the old herring water and all, and you'd be... Whoa! And you'd have nothing to vomit. And they'd be shouting, like, you pull down the rope, pull down the rope, and you that weight, you'd be falling off your feet with sickness. But then, that would, they all went away then. So I'd never be sick anymore after that. But it all depended on the conditions too, like, you know, where you were and then the smell of engines are going on, yeah.
Barmead Castle was used extensively as a landmark because coming in the evening, the best time for prawns inshore close to Clarehead is coming on dawn and dusk. That's the best time. So in the evening time, the boats would leave the harbour and steam out to the southeast, which would be about 4 or 5 miles east of Drogheda Bar. When you go actually out to sea and you look back, you see all the highland, you can see the high marks, the hills, the church steeples, Barmead Castle. These are all used as landmarks in conjunction with, you have two fixed positions, either a wood or a house or a building. Now, Barmead Castle would have been a very good one because you had Barmead Castle, and then you could see, when you look back, you'll see Barmead Castle on the pier. Barmead and on the pier would be a very good landmark for coming in for prawns. When you go south, then you would pick up Barmead on the head. That's the actual headland of Clarehead. That would be another landmark. And as you go south again, you would have Barmead in the village. That would mean you'd have Barmead sitting high up, the village is close to the sea. That's another landmark. And when you go further south again, you would have Barmead and Markey's Wood. Now, Markey's is the, when you're coming in to Clarehead on the coastal road, it's the big house and the castle on the left-hand side. There's a wood there. That's another landmark. So they would have been all used without any electrical navigation. There was, at them days, there was no navigation. So they were all tried and trusted headland or marks for fishing. And then you go south, I think, again, then you'd have marks up south and draw the bar all the whole way up to Milbriggan, out to Skerries. There's a couple of wrecks up there. One is called the Barges, another wreck is called the Iron Carmel, another wreck is called Kenure, which is Kenure Castle in between Skerries and Milbriggan. That would be another one that would be used. So when we come back down to Clarehead, then from Skerries to Clarehead, it's all sand. So the only obstacles you would have in the seabed there would be anchors, which would be well noted, you'd have all of those in landmarks, and the two or three racks you would know those, because it's all sandy ground. But when you come to Clarehead, from Clarehead down across the Nenny and away out across the Cooley and the Moor Mountains, that's all stony, sandy ground, which would require an awful lot of very good seamanship to know every landmark, because you're putting your nets, you're putting your ropes in amongst rocky outcrops and stones and sand, so you need to know exactly what landmarks you're going by then.
This one time there was a storm, and it was probably just a little bit of wind, but to us it was rocky. The boat was rocking from side to side, and I remember it was lashing rain, and we used to bring our duvets and our pillows with us out fishing, because Dad would make us a bed up in the wheelhouse with him. We wouldn't be down in the bunks with everyone else. He'd make us our own little lovely comfy bed up in the wheelhouse beside him, so we'd always be with him. And then we're coming in one night, and he put us sitting, so you have the wheel of the boat that you steer the boat with, and he put us sitting right beside that in this duvet, the two of us sitting there afraid of our lives. We were going to die, and it was the worst thing ever, and it was the biggest storm ever. And I remember my mom was waiting at the harbour for us when we came in. I'd say she was so annoyed because he was after bringing us out, and it was blowing a bit of wind, but it was brilliant. Like, we used to love going out.
I was telling you the story about going for the boat in Scotland. That was 79. The brother put up a boat in Scotland, and myself and the brother and another chap went over for it. And we're bringing her home. We're coming up through the, what we call the North Channel, between Scotland and Northern Ireland. In the middle of the night, it was flat deck. And a gale of wind, and the other two were blowing the bunk. And I could see this big swell coming, and I got a lot of right for it. But before, when she went over it, before she could settle, the other one came and struggled. It was a massive bang. And next thing, the two lads come up, and what so-and-so are you doing? Blew them out of the bunk. It was that bad. So that was all right. We went home anyway. The chap next to me, he was 29, he died. And we were at the funeral for a couple of days. And then they went out to get the boat out of fishing. So I went out, and I was asked to put the box, a big box of chain into the boat in Scotland, Abbott. And I said, where's the box of chain? No box of chain. Said, there have to be. Because the rail on the board from the deck was about that height. And the box would be down here. That'll tell you how far over she went. That she threw the box of chain out of the board. And she had the hair still in my neck, and I'll tell you. The clothes were inches away from getting to us. And we wouldn't have a hope. We'd know she capsized it. That was, we'd have no life jackets, no nothing. That was one near miss.
We have two or three wrecks east of Clarehead, northeast of Clarehead. We have the Sheikah's Gear. Now, the Sheikah was a big fishing boat that was commissioned when the fishmeal factory in Marlintown was going. And it came and it used to fish, and it used to land the sprats into the fishmeal factory in Marlintown. Well, he lost all his nets, his doors, the gear, he lost it all. Now, for years and years, there was an area called the Sheikah's Gear. So all the fishing boats would stay clear, but for fear of catching it. Then we have the Nelly Wood, which was an old boat from last out of Kilkeel in the 40s, or maybe after the war, my father told me. It's about 7 miles east of Clarehead. When we come north in, we have rocks here called Craigahulla. It's a rocky outcrop 1 mile northeast of the pier, and it's actually 1 mile in circumference. And either side of it is all pure sand. So it was a very good area too for prawns and for fish, because the fish would be coming off the rocks onto the sand. And then when we go north again, then we come down to another rocky patch. And this rocky patch is out on its own, so it's called the patch, because it's just one area away, clear of, it's all sand all around it. So it's another place that you would have to know your landmarks. Then we have the Topaz, the famous wreck below at the Nanny, which was coming from Scotland with railway girders. She was lost at the Nanny. She actually went up onto the reef in the Nanny and came back down off the reef. And she is about 2 miles off the Nanny Point, southeast of the Nanny Point. So when we go north again, then there's another wreck that I know of. It's called the Crusader, which was a luxury yacht at the time. It was 180 foot, but it was neglected after the war, and it was being brought to Warren Point to be converted into a yacht, a big yacht at the time, and it sank.